Welcome back, everyone. Ladies and gentlemen and children of all ages, turn your attention to the center ring. Well, it's been a little bit since we have been here. I am starting this episode. I will have the other one come in a little bit later. But welcome back to the Whitebeard and TK podcast. I am one of your hosts. I am T. Anthony, also known as Whitebeard. This is interesting. Today's subject, actually, it's a bit of review as well as it's part of a larger discussion. I'm going to say, we haven't been on the air, or we haven't had a podcast in a while because there were things that was going on that we had to do in our daily life, like most of you. As you probably guessed, I've also been sick. Had a cold I've been fighting for a while. I'm on a tail end of the cold at this point because now I sneeze and things are coming out from all over the place. So, yeah. So that's where I'm at. And we actually meant to do something earlier this week since there was no, Monday. No Walking Dead episode this week. They took a break and they'll be back next week. We're actually going to Zoom. We're actually going to see and review a zombie film just to fill the zombie gap. But we started this film that I thought was going to be kind of fun, which was G Zombie, which is some Indian thing. And we started watching it. It was trash. And I was so mad that I wasted half of my time watching half of that movie. And I just didn't want to watch anything else. And it just, I gave up. So I decided to go back to finishing the series that we started. We had actually started two series at the same time. But we started Small Axes. So I decided Small Axe. So I decided to go back and just finish that and take a break. And then earlier today, we watched a Korean film that we will be reviewing called Flu, 2013 film. So, and that was much better. So let's get into this. Like I said, this is partly a review and it is partly a larger discussion. If you haven't heard of Small Axe, it is available on Amazon, Amazon Prime. As we all know, over the past few years, as the movie industry has learned, people are going out to see movies, but they're streaming them and they would rather see something for a little bit less. You know, to stream a film for a membership for $11 to $15 a month is a lot better than going into a theater and spending about close to $15 per ticket per person when you could just kick your feet up in your own house. And so, you know, all these streaming services started to decide they're going to have a production company and start producing films and TV shows. And so that's where we're at. So Amazon has been doing a few good ones over the years. I'm going to say Netflix was the first one that started out, and then followed by Hulu. And we all know what happened with 2020, and everybody was pretty much home. And so the only people who was making money off of any type of film were all the streaming services, because everybody was locked into the house and they're already paying this money. Those who probably dealt with the entertainment, I mean, some people probably was like, I'm not spending my last dollar on this, but if that was the only entertainment they can get, they probably went with that, as they had to close down a lot of accounts for those who were not working. And so, as you would think, Netflix and the rest of them had a stockpile of things that were going to be coming out, and a lot of things I was listening to, or I was checking out things that I like to watch on Amazon that were about to be in the works, and they just got stopped. Like Jack Ryan. And so we're going to have to wait some more time for that. But Netflix has been in the business, so they already had their stockpile of films to just start rolling out throughout the year, as well as some other things. It seems like stuff was being rushed. As most of us have lived through that year, that I have dubbed last year as the summer of hate, or I could just go with the whole year of hate. But there was a lot that came out. And so when this series came out at the end of the year, I was like, what is this? I saw the poster with Letitia White was in it. And she had this afro. I saw the fist go up in the air, and I'm like, oh, good gracious, here we go. Can this year get any worse than all of this, you know, for lack of a better word, pro-black, white man bad, black man needs this. I was like, I had enough. I do not want to end my year with this, although it looked fairly interesting. And right before that, the guy who played, is it Finn, I believe? Elizabeth isn't here helping me, so I believe his name was Finn in Star Wars thing. And he had already been in the news and talking about racist things and getting all upset, talking about if people don't want to see him because of this and all the others. And I was just sitting there listening to this nonsense at that point going, dude, you're an actor and you're getting paid to play some other people. Please stop. So I didn't want to give... John who?
Boyega.
John Boyega. And so I really didn't want to give this any time or any chance to it or anything else. So I lost my train of thought. She snuck in here with her face all made up with some facial stuff. And it told me his name. And so I really didn't want to go through the whole... Yeah. Okay. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a break, put in the email information... And then I'm going to come back because I need some water and my throat's bugging me. Hold that thought. Now that I have your attention, I have two things for you. When we say we want to hear from you, we truly do. Whether it's comments or ideas or maybe a show thing that you want to tell us about, whether it's for the Book Nook, the Road to 60 series, or our adventure stuff that we do on Tuesdays and just about life in general. And of course, we all know there's a Walking Dead on Monday. You can reach us at whitebeardandtk@gmail.com. That's whitebeardandtk@gmail.com, because we truly do want to hear from you. We want to know what you think and some ideas you might have for us. The second thing is, run on over to YouTube and subscribe to our channel, The Whitebeard and TK Experience. The original name was going to be Whitebeard and TK Adventures, as you will see soon with one of the videos. But it was changed to Experience because on Tuesdays, I've been putting video clips of the podcasts. So it's more than just our adventure series, which we'll be doing on Fridays, but we'll also be doing other things. So it's not just one thing like our podcast. So that's why it is called the Whitebeard and TK Experience on YouTube. Go now, subscribe, and share. And as the videos come out, you'll be the first to get them. And again, we'd love to hear from you. And that's at TK Whitebeard and TK at gmail.com. Now back to the show. I am back. So if you haven't heard of, excuse the rattling, Small Axe yet, it is, what do you call it? An anthology. And there are five films in this anthology. And I want to say it is written. I know that he did write some of them, directed a few of these things. The film is it was created and directed by some guy named Steve McQueen. Now, I heard Steve McQueen. I'm like, Steve McQueen? I thought it was the descendant of Steve McQueen, the actor from a while back. But his grandson, I don't think it's his son. I think it's his grandson. His name is Stephen R. McQueen or Steve R. McQueen. I was like, he wrote this? That sounds kind of interesting. Anyway, so it's an anthology. And it is an anthology about What do you want to say? The experiences of West Indians or the West Indian community in London. So let's say it's the British West Indian community, right? Yeah, I guess you go with that. So it's an anthology of the experiences of the people who came from the Caribbean, the West Indies, into London and the things that they were going through. Now, quick check, it says that it's between the years of 1969 and 1982. So I was kind of close when we were watching, so I'm like, man, those clothes look familiar. That sound sounds familiar. It's got to be around the 70s. And what's his name? Boyega. If I said that right, I said it right the first time. The one that he's in, I think it spans all the way up into the 80s. And so that's what this is about. So when I finally decided to look at it again this year, because they had the Underground Railroad, I'm like, what is this? We started that whole thing, and it's really weird. But maybe more on that later. And so I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? That's pretty interesting. Here's a story, and here's some things that we don't usually hear much about. Let me give you the title of the shows. The title of the episodes, rather. They are... No, that's not it. That's not what I'm looking for. Actually, just got finished looking over the last one before I came out here. It's Mangrove, the first one. It's five of them. Mangrove, Lover's Rock, Red, White, and Blue. Alex, is it Weedle? Alex Weedle, and Education. The runtime is different between each one. I believe Mangrove was about 2 hours. And which one? What? Two of them were about 2 hours long, and the others are mostly about an hour, a little bit over an hour long. And so there are different stories that are being told. So you're not seeing the people go through a particular time. Each story is contained in one thing. How can I get into this? You know, I'll go backwards. The last episode, called Education, is about a young man who goes to a school who clearly we see is has a problem. Now, it says that he needs special education. This is the fifth one. But as we're sitting here and we're watching, we're discovering, well, his problem is, he looked cut up in class a little bit, little jokester, but that wasn't it. He had been called into the counselor's office a number of times, and as a guy speaks to the parent, he says, I've met him a lot, and he didn't meet the mother. And so he informed her that the boy failed an IQ test, and he scored below average, so they're going to send him to a special school to help him get to where he need to be. The boy didn't like it because he liked the school. He came home and complained to his big sister that he had been kicked out of school. And so we go on about this. Mother goes back to work because she works two jobs. The father works another job. And they're not really even in the same house at the same time. They seem to pass by each other. She works day and work night. Dad is a carpenter, works somewhere else. The daughter is an inspiring fashion designer, and the boy wants to be an astronaut. So he has all these things around his room, and he's dreaming of being an astronaut. And there's this great scene where he's praying and asking God to forgive him for his behavior, and he wants to be an astronaut. You see the daughter in her room, and she's praying and she's asking to become this fashion designer so she can make lots of money, she can travel all over, she can buy material from all over the place. And then you cut to the other scene, the mother's praying, she's sleeping. In the middle of her prayer, she falls asleep and she's sleeping on the bed. So I mean, this is a hard-working family. And it was kind of hard to have to put this kid into a school for some special needs that he was supposed to have. He gets into the school, and they put him in here, and there's a lot of different kids. He had to get in the school bus, and his friends, his mates were calling him and wanting to find out where he was at. He said, hey, you don't have to wear a uniform anymore. He gets on the little green bus, goes off to the school. Get to the school that looks like any other school, right? There's a teacher who's in there, and they see this teacher, an Irish woman, I want to say, because of her accent. And Elizabeth picked up on it. I didn't. Something that she said to him, I thought she said something about Batgirl, whatever. And that's not what she said. So he said, okay, so what are we going to do? So I have, so they're in the classroom, and she tells them to sit down, and they're showing some flashcards to see if they knew what the things were. And someone was in the back taking notes. And the flashcard said, I forgot what was on it. Let's say chair. One kid said chair, went to a little girl, and she started barking. Then they go to a little boy, whose name escapes me at the time, and ask him, and he just stares. So the girl says, it's a different word, by the way. Let's say cabinet. Okay, what about you? He's just staring at it, and he's just looking. So the girl who said chair the first time said, it's cabinet. I know it's cabinet. He says, okay, we'll just sound it out. So the professor, the doctor. The teacher's trying to get him to explain, you know, well, what's this first letter? And the kid doesn't know the first letter, so the lady in the back is writing down some names, writing down some messages or whatever that she's taking notes about. And so we move on from there. So clearly what we thought from the beginning, the evidence right now is in front of us. The kid couldn't read. So she goes out and there's a big recess lunchtime, and so the teacher takes them outside and they run. And so she tells them, you can play, you can do whatever you want to do, run, and something else, just don't break any bones. Right? So he asks her, well, what are we supposed to do? She pulls out a cigarette, she starts smoking, and says something like, I don't care what you do, you can pretend like you're in the jungle, you can pretend like you're back home in the jungle and swing around. And I was like, whoa. And that one missed me. I don't know how Elizabeth picked up on that one, but she got that and I missed it. So I was like, okay. We know she a pain in the behind. So they go to the kitchen, they're playing and all the other good stuff. Another day he goes to school and some lady shows up and says she's a school counselor. The boy's on his way out the door and she ran into him and she talks to him and said, what's your name? Do I know your parents? What's your parents' name? He's like, a little suspicious. He says his name and brings her into classroom. She walks into the classroom and said, what is this? With her accent, I'm not gonna try it. Kids are running buck wild. One's barking, doing some other stuff. He said, well, where's your teacher? He said, well, he doesn't usually show up. Sometimes he comes in, sometimes he doesn't. You heard that right. In this school for special students, supposedly it's to tell the parents, but kids who have these special needs and such, the teachers show up or don't show up. So they said, okay. She sits them down, she gets them orderly. I forgot what she was starting to do, but then the guy walks in and says, hey, with a cigarette. And he's the teacher, and they say he's the teacher. Say, you know what? So she says her name and said, oh, we were looking for you to come into the student's lounge. And she said, well, I came in here, there was no teacher. You know, when she meets a little boy, he says, she said, I'm not a teacher. And he said, she used to be a teacher. And so she leaves the classroom, but before she finds the kid's name and she tries to get some other kids' names and the name of their parents, said, do I know you? But she scurries out with the guy. Come to find out, she's part of a little group. One of the people in the group knows his mom. And so the mother says, you know, so she tells the mother, you remember me? I was into politics. Well, I'm into this thing here. And we're trying to go after the educational system because they are dumping all of our children into these things which is called Subhuman. Excuse me. I think it was Subhuman Education. I'll ask, what's the name, to come back on here. And they're dumping all of our children into this. And she's been checking around. Now, there were white kids in the class. So I don't know what was the choice. I don't know what was it that they put them into there, or those kids are already in that school, but then they were snatching up all the Jamaican kids and all the other kids in West Indies, throw them in there. Like, one boy was put in there because he had a thick accent. He couldn't understand. This is another family who was talking at a group meeting and was saying the reason why he had some other troubles. So they had this whole booklet together. It was talking about the study of what happens to these children when they're in these particular school, when they're in these classrooms, and how in the future they will never rise above menial labor. Crazy. So, the mother talks to the boy and try to get him to read. She figures out he can't read. He's crying. Said, okay, let me go talk to you. Well, she ain't said, like, talk to your dad. She went to speak to the father. The father gets mad and said, just let her alone. You know, the boy just knows how to, has to learn how to read. Well, we discover, although dad's a carpenter, he can't read either. And so she agrees to send him to, because the lady said, we have this Saturday classes, right? So I'm speeding through to the end of this to get to the point that I said I was going to open this up with. He gets to the school and the lady greets him, and the sister has to drop him off. So she's bringing him in. Okay, see you later. He's like, school on Saturday, it's not fair. She said, life's not fair. She tries to push him into the door, and the lady greets him, says her name, and says, what about you, sister? I said, no, I'm just going to leave. She said, no, really? So you don't want to learn about whatever the lady's name is. He said, who's that? She said, exactly. So she invites her to come and said, you can leave whenever you want. And so she was telling her that they have a Black Studies class or an African Studies group. It says it's designed for people just like you. So when they come in, they talk, and there's this great scene. And these two boys are challenging each other with times tables. And they're going, they're rattling off the numbers. And they're in the 12th time table, the 10th time table. And the guy wins. And so the teacher says, it's a draw. So the other one says, do you know your 13? And so you go, I know my 13. He said, run off. And he says the first one wrong. He's like, see, I win. I was like, whoa, these are little geniuses. So she's talking. And then after dinner, they went off and they begin this little group. She pulls out this book. I forgot what it's called. African Kings and Queens for Little Children. That may have been the book. I'm not really sure. The title is somewhat like that. And they start reading. But before she reads, she asks him a question. And I turn to Elizabeth. And I'm going to tell you what I told her. And that will kind of kick off more of where I'm headed with this. Because as I said, this is a series review. But it's a much larger discussion. So she said, what do you know about our people? Something like that. And so the kid goes, or the girl says, that we were slaves. And the teacher answers, that's what they want you to know. And I turned to Elizabeth and said, that's all they want you to know. So a teacher tells them the story before they start reading that, you know, she had been, clearly she comes from, she went to school in Ghana, and she learned a lot, but she never learned about African history. And that opened up for her to try, you know, to do more studies into that. So part of the school, in the lessons that they're learning, mathematics and everything else, she has this little African studies group. I put it like that. So they were reading things. And so this episode ends with him reading that book, because within that circle, the sister is called to read. And so she starts reading, and then it pretty much phases out to black. And you hear the boy struggling to read. And then you hear him begin to read. And then you hear his voice get older as he's clearly able to read. And then you see the stars up in the back because he wanted to be an astronaut and stuff. And that's how it ends. Hold on, I'm choking on one of these honey drops in my throat. And that opens up this thing to this larger question, or this larger discussion of the African diaspora. Now, in school, I learned a little bit of it. It was really basically the first time as an undergrad, it was basically the first time I heard of the African diaspora. Or even that word diaspora. I may have heard it over the years from someone. I did hear someone say years ago about the Jewish people being dispersed into a diaspora. So I never heard of, until that moment as an undergrad, of the African diaspora. If you, dear listener, don't understand what this means, that means here was this massive continent. Some people may have called it the dark continent and all other kind of stuff. Let me take this out of my mouth. You've got this massive continent. And out of this continent, you took the people of Africa and picked them up and shipped them out all over the world. Asia, there is a group of us. There's a group of African peoples, the African descendants in the Asian area. There are some in Russia, so there's Eastern Bloc. And we all pretty much know that most were brought down to South America. Yes, look at the Brazilian people. They're dropped down in South America, the Caribbean, and in the Caribbean, that includes Puerto Rico, that includes the Dominican Republic, and that includes Haiti, which is both in the same island, if I'm correct, and Cuba, and all the rest of that. So you have that. And you have a few that were off in British Honduras, obviously, right? British Honduras, which is now called Belize, or just Honduras. I believe Honduras is still there, but British Honduras is what is now called Belize. So you had some people that were put into there, and of course they mix with the Mexicans, not the Mexicans, I believe it was Aztec. Over there is an Aztec further up in towards Mexico. Whatever the case may be. So you had some that were there, and of course, we know that they came up north and a lot more west of Africa and dropped off into the United States. And that is diaspora. Spread out across the entire globe, people snatched up from Africa and sent out. And the only story I heard, it was a Christian rapper many, many years ago, and a song was talking about how come every time we hear about black history, now I'm talking about in America, by the way, primarily I'm speaking about America when I say this type of statement. Whenever we hear about black history, it always starts us off as slaves. Isn't that the truth? Whenever black history is discussed in this country, it is always started, and it seems like it only starts, it begins and ends with slavery. As if there is nothing else part of black history or African history in this country. African born in American Africans who were in America, American Africans, there you go, American Africans instead of African Americans. American Africans, that's where it starts and it ends with slavery. In a little over 300 plus years, we still have people who were in these so-called black communities, so-called black leaders in these black communities, who always starts us off at the same spot and end at the same spot and say we need to do something about the same thing. They never seem to move past that. And we had lots of years of this stuff going on, but I think last year is probably the most recent that people can remember in their brain of when a whole lot of crazy went on last year. A whole lot of words of racism this and racism that went on everywhere. And the redlining this and the redlining that. Matter of fact, we read an article the other day about redlining. I had put a post on Instagram, and as usually, I do certain things and people never comment. They have nothing to say. Let me put a Bible verse and they go, amen. Let me say something else and go, oh yeah, I went camping there. But you start something to have a decent discussion and people are silent. Are silent. And the only time they will say something or speak up about something is if it's about the other end of what I'm talking about, which is always talking about, which is the reason why I didn't want to see the show. You know, white man bad, black people, we slaves. I'm like, I'm done. I don't want to see it. What pushed me to finally see this thing, that this anthology that started in November, was the fact that I reread what the whole thing was about. And it was about the Caribbean community. I was like, oh, well, that ought to be interesting. And it was interesting. I get back to diaspora and everything else if I can remember to get back to that. But I want to get back to just a little bit more reviewing of the series first. What you're going to get when you view this is different stories or storytelling that even me as an American and as many, we don't hear of these stories of Africans from around the world, of black people from all over the world. We don't get to hear these stories because we're always bombarded with the same story. Slaves, Underground Railroad, they done came up here, we free, yet we only eat some chicken. It's always the same sort of stupid stories over and over and over again, as if there isn't a more dynamic story to be told. Stories of achievements, stories of adventures. There's always like there's no other story to be. So this was what attracted me to this. And then I heard it. We get into this one episode, and I'll tell you about this one. Lovers Rock. And for anyone who doesn't know what Lovers Rock is, think of Bob Marley. And I'll throw like this. Jamaican slow jams. And I told my daughter, I said, you know what? I said, watch this episode. I said, remember all those years I told you, and I used to go to like Aunt Carmen's parties and I would hang out with my friends. We go to Jamaican parties. I said, this is what it was like. A booming sound system, music thumping, and you could feel it through your chest. A line of guys up against the wall like wallflowers watching some people dance, some of the girls dance. You got the other ones dancing inside and they're close. The house is packed. You know it's sweating. And you got all these bodies of people just dancing to this music and the music is infectious. And in some other room, there's somebody cooking. I said, this is what it was like. And so she just watched that. And it took me a bit to realize, because I saw it the day before and we watched it together. It took me a while to realize that all that happened in that episode was just one night. It was one night. And so she's heard me tell these stories. Because when I grew up, I think my mid-teens, I want to say, I used to hang out with Dominicans who were just now in, you know, large numbers coming to the U.S. And they were all up there in that area where my aunt used to live. So I was hanging out with Dominicans and Jamaicans. of course, other black kids. But, you know, I was hanging out with Dominicans and Jamaicans, so I had all these different flavors, you know, and food too. And so I had all these different flavors. As a matter of fact, one of the guys who owned a grocery store, my friend was dating, not his daughter, because all of them who came from, and many of them who we knew were Jamaicans, others came from other parts of the Caribbean, Trinidadian, and everything else. But one guy owned a grocery store, and I worked as security for 1 or 2 days or something like that. And he owned another business that we'll just say wasn't legal. But I worked in his grocery store, and so we watched over it. And hey, for a teenager, that was some nice money, and I'd just go right next door and spend it inside the diner and get a cheeseburger with fries and hang out with my friends and go see a movie. So we would be at these parties, going as hot, and just listen. And what's her name would have like some fish head stew cooking on a stove and some other things. You go get this food, you got all this music pumping, and it was some good stuff. But didn't hang out with too many of those parties because sometimes fights would have broken out because of whatever happened back in, I don't know where they came from, Trenchtown or wherever. Well, some of them brought that up there. One of the guys, one night, was someone who was with the Wailers, Bob Marley and the Wailers. He knew Charm, well, that's not her real name, but I'll say it anyway. That's the nickname. We knew her. Charm, her relatives knew one of the Wailers or whoever it was. So they were kind of close. So they were at the house one night. But anyway, so this episode, man, this took me back. It took me way, way back. And that was a fun episode to watch. Mangrove was about a man who owned a restaurant, and he put this restaurant on his town, and a cop would usually come by to harass him all the time, just harass. And one day he comes in and just asks him about, what do you serve here? He said, we serve spicy food. He said, well, you don't sell any food that people can eat. He says, well, you know what? This is what we sell. And so this ignorant cop couldn't stand him, and he would roust him all the time, bust him, and do a lot of other stuff. And you'd have to watch it for yourself to see how it ends up. But I'll tell you this, the harassment of that guy in his restaurant lasted, I think it was 30 years. He had to deal with that guy. Back and forth and lawsuits and a lot of other stuff. So following that is Lovers Rock, and then there is Red, White, and Blue, which is the Star Wars kids episode, and that spans time, and that involves him becoming a cop, much to the dismay of his dad. His dad did not like that because his father was abused by cops and beaten and bloody and put into the hospital. And so, you know, his idea, what he was telling him, is that, you know what, well, I'm going to be in there so I can change things. And he really believed that he was going to be in there, he could change things from the inside. He found it quite difficult. So that was another great one. And then the Alex guy, poor kid, he went through so much through the foster care system and not having his parents and getting into criminality and a lot of other stuff. And again, they had issues with the cops, who they called Beast in that particular episode. And so it was a massive problem because and it looks like most of them took place around the same time, because in the backdrop of the story, you hear people say there's a revolution coming or there's something happening, because within that area, they have had enough of the mistreatment by the cops. They had enough of the mistreatment by the local government and politicians. And now they were starting to fight back with lawsuits and some other stuff. I mean, I watched all five of them. And education was, I just told you about the kid who had a problem in reading and they had to put him into a different school. So it was fighting the whole educational issue. Get to that in a moment. So I tell my daughter, I'm like, you know what? I don't know about them, because I'm like, the Brits are way too nice. Because if a cop is going to come up and harass me, you don't have a gun, you got a stick, it's going down. See, it's not like in America. You might get shot. Because our police carry guns. But, you know, and they didn't. And they were able to do all the stuff they did, and all they did was have sticks and no pistols. But then again, that is British culture. See, American culture is a little bit different than British culture. I remember a professor of mine once said, if you want to know about black history, they say, go to England or study British history. I found that statement very funny, but I kind of understand what he means right now, because they hold a lot of key to a lot of different things since, you know, that European area over there did take place in dispersing Africans all over the continent, all over the globe, rather. So, but that's neither here nor there for this discussion. What I found was, I wasn't angry, I was disturbed, I was ticked off of watching all the different things, but I was fascinated to hear the experiences of them in England during around the same time of the experiences of blacks in America. Now, what we rarely ever hear is experiences of Africans, whether in South or West Africa or even Central, during that time. And I'll tell you something about that a little bit later. But what I did find interesting is this. No matter where Africans were dropped off in this diaspora, we were treated horribly. All over the globe. Horribly. Some places, like in America, mostly in the South, treated disgustingly. The slave trade in America was far... The treatment and mistreatment was really, really bad. What we don't really talk about is the Arab slave trade, which was far worse to Africans and did a lot more harm, and it lasted for a long time. I'm not going to get into that because I don't know about that, so I'm not going to speak on it. But I know a little bit about American slavery, and it's just the way that slaves were treated in this country is crazy. But I think that they were treated that way because they learned their history because of what happened in the Caribbean. See, the Caribbean slaves were treated a little bit better. They ate a little bit better. And they remained strong for a little bit longer. So when they had all their uprisings and riots and their fights, they was kicking butt. And that's why you will find that in that area, many of them fought for their freedom and were free just a little bit sooner than American slaves were. Now, was there mistreatment of them? There surely was. There surely was. I mean, we'll see stories here about African slaves being whipped and went on a whipping pole. Sort of like if you look at what's that Netflix thing I said earlier? The Underground Railroad, where they had like a whipping pole and do the other stuff. But here's some of the stuff that took place down in the Caribbean. I don't know if it took place here in America. But in order to punish some of the men, they would rape these men, these African men, in front of people. Yes, they sodomized them. To force them into submission and to do whatever it is they want to do, in order to increase and put fear in people to make them submit and do what they wanted them to do. So as I said earlier, this is a much larger discussion. Because as we look at the disbursement of Africans on every part of this globe, we have been treated horribly. Now, we get to America, you could see within American history that, you know, each person who was lower on the system, as we say, the caste system, which started in India, but it wasn't more the caste system here, it's more of a class system. So the lower class free labor were the Africans, and then you had the low on the pole were the Irish who came over, and since the other white people didn't like them too much and thought they were low class, they were low on the totem pole, and then it can, and then it goes all the way up. And before someone starts saying, well, what about the Native Americans or First Nations people? They had African slaves too. And some of them didn't treat them well as well. So like I said, no matter where Africans were dispersed, they were treated horribly. Now you could say, well, the Irish were treated this way and the Chinese were treated this way and the so-and-so were treated this way, but none of them were treated the way they were because of the color of their skin. And in that is where we have a difference. And that is the difference that has caused a lot of pain to be inflicted on Africans in the diaspora all over the globe. As an undergrad, I posed this thing, and I told it to my daughter the other day. I said, I want you to think about something. I said, you know, we were talking about people being snatched up from South Africa, West Africa, and a lot of other places. And I said, you know, when they put folks onto the ships, right? Sold by other Africans, by the way. Let's not forget that. They were sold into the Americans. They were sold into the transatlantic slave trade. I think that's the real name we're calling it. The transatlantic slave trade, right? These were sold by other Africans, by the way. But my point was, do you think that they went over to snatch up those who were blind, crippled, and crazy? Of course not. If you wanted a labor force, you would have taken the strongest and the youngest of all the labor forces. You definitely want young women because later on they started using for breeding, right? So you want the strongest and the youngest, the people who can work the hardest. And so you're just taking that off this entire continent from different places. So what are you leaving behind? Not a lot. And you're leaving fractured families, fractured tribes, fractured lands, fractured peoples and nations, whatever you want to call them, that have to try to rebuild. Think about it. It makes absolutely no sense in all the world for the apartheid to ever existed in South Africa. They were the minority. How in the world could they be? How in the world could they have held captive the majority of that part of the world? Who were these Dutch? They clearly was not like the Vikings. And we know the Vikings were vicious. So you had the Dutch and the rest of them come down there, and then the British later on. And it's like you enslave these people on their own continent. You extrapolate diamonds. You've got coal coming out of it. We already know China's over there just taking coal out of there. Not coal. Oil up out of there and all the other stuff. The gold, the fertile land that can grow tea and all this other. And everybody's taking and picking from Africa. As if they hadn't had enough of being picked over for centuries. When I was in school, as an undergrad in my school, the campus that I went to was in the middle of Harlem on 125th Street. Now, I grew up a little bit in Harlem, but I was up on 154th Street, somewhere like that, in Colonial Projects, I think it's now called Charles Ringel Housing or something. Or another, it doesn't really matter. So I wasn't down that far. We were way uptown. Today, they still call it uptown. So I wasn't down around that area. And if you go, you can go three blocks or five blocks to the left or the right or to the north or the south of 125th Street and you will find a depressed area that seems to be stuck in time. And I had this issue when I was in school because a lot of my classmates were from Harlem. I was from the Bronx. My professors were from all over the place. Some were from Harlem. My math professor was from, I don't think he was from Nigeria. I think he was from Ghana. Professor, nope, he's not a professor. He's a doctor. I forgot. He has a doctor degree in what you call it. The other one was Nigerian. I had a couple of Nigerian professors. Most of them were black. We had a few other white professors in the school. At any rate, there was a lot of argument going on because they were always talking about the gentrification of Harlem and all this other things. And I said one day in class, and it was not received well, and I was looked at like I had 30 heads, that I said, okay, well, you know what? Before you guys had Harlem, it was being run and lived by Jews. And before that, it was somebody else, because most blacks moved from down where 34th Street was before they were forced uptown. And they were forced uptown to then now they landed in that Harlem area, and then that's where they had. And as we were going through classes and stuff, I had to study the Renaissance, the Black Renaissance, a lot of other stuff. You look at this like a whole 220-year period of blacks in Harlem, and it had this one period where things were good, and then the next period everything just fell. And so we got to arguing about gentrification. I said, well, if it's going to help things, it'd be better. And so one person, no, you don't. I'm like, no, you don't understand. You had 220 years in this area. What has been produced? What? And more of the stuff that I would get into argument was is because of the mindset of my classmates who live in Harlem were stuck in 1960 or 70 something. They couldn't get out. They were just stuck there. And so we had a lot of arguments about that, and I totally forgot where I was going with this. I had a lot of arguments because when we're trying to discuss something, they couldn't move forward because they were always stuck in that one particular spot. It's sort of like, you know, you talk, like I said earlier, you talk about slavery, and it's like, okay, here's slavery, and this is where life begins for black people in America. This is where life ends for black people in America. We don't go anywhere else. But that's not true. One lady says, and I forgot what episode, she said, you know what? When we come here, they treat us this way and act like we weren't doctors and lawyers and engineers and all these different things back at home where we come from. And they look down on us. That was sort of the same mindset when Africans were snatched up because people didn't speak their language. So they just assumed because of the way they were dressing and how they did and how their government was how the type of government they had was run was more savage and lower class and didn't have any brains. But that's not the case. Anyway, so, you know, hasn't enough been taken away from that continent now? And so one of my, now I got it. Now I know what's going with the whole Harlem thing. So one of my things I said in class one day was that, you know, there needs to be a healing, and the healing is not really going to happen because I was a Pan-African fan, by the way. And I said, it's a healing has to happen. It's not going to happen until Africans and Black Americans or African American, whatever you want to call yourself, come together to heal. That's where the healing needs to be. That fractured family needs to repair itself and get back together. Have you ever gone to a Chinese restaurant? Maybe you see the box of oil that they have or the bag of rice that's sitting in the back. What is the writing that you see? Made in America? Absolutely not. Their products come from China, over here, except for maybe the ketchup. And this is what they use. You go to a bodega, and not the type of one that knucklehead who's running for mayor of New York is. What's his name? Yang? Oh, good Lord. That stupid campaign thing he did. I'm in my favorite bodega. And I'm getting this like, dude. No. That is a gourmet deli. If there is not a cat rolling around the back, that's not a bodega. If the millions of people who are in that store with you are not speaking Spanish, that is not a bodega. But anyway, he tried. If you go into a corner store, right, you will find Vita Rose, Goya, and other products that come from the Latin part or the Hispanic part of the Caribbean. If you go into a quote-unquote black-owned store, do you see things in there that come from products that come from West Africa? Do you see some products that come from the Caribbean? Jamaica, Trinidad. It's a rare occasion if you even see a black grocery store. Why do we say black grocery store? Why do we say Korean markets? The Korean grocer. Why do we say bodega? So don't get mad at me if I say a black grocery store, because they don't really exist, at least not in New York City. Now, there are black farmers all over this country, small farms, but they exist. Are we doing business with them? So see, unless, as I said in school, there's a healing where they come together, this fractured family, then we can't heal together. And we are a fractured family. We have been spread across the entire globe. And wherever we have been mistreated. And we've all had different experiences, and in different parts of this globe, we have risen, some of us, to great status, and in some parts did lower status, and we have not risen at all. And for some reason, for some places, like in America, stuck in a time bubble. Well, when I brought up that idea in class, you could hear a pin drop. And then you can hear the blaze of the fire as the torches were coming to burn me. I ain't no African. What I got to do with Africa? In other ignorant statements like that. Now, I'm not talking that Marcus Garvey type of stuff where it's like, back to Africa. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I'm talking about is we lack, because of the fractured family, stories and our own history. And our own history doesn't begin and end with American history. Because even within American history, a lot of the stories of Africans in this country are erased, hidden, and can't be found. Much like with First Nation, you know, pretty much wiped out. With the stories of them and how their government was run and all the different nations that were going on around the country. So we have similar history. So they didn't want to hear that in class, that, you know, this sort of thing has to happen. Well, I've ran into a lot of people over my years doing Christian ministry in church and working at camps. And I've run into people from, I want to say Ghana. Uganda. I forgot what the country is that's right up under that, under Uganda, closer. Kenya, Uganda, and I meet somebody from Somalia. No. We did meet some Germans, but their family came from, darn it, were they from Ghana before they moved to Germany? I freaked out. I was like, there are black people in Germany? But and we had a great talk. We were in a Nigerian restaurant, me and my wife. At the time, she took me for my birthday, and they brought us a towel for us to wipe our hands with. And I'm sitting there going, what are we going to do with this? Guess what? There was no knife and fork. So I had to learn, had to unlearn how to eat in order to learn how to eat this food. I did not like the bread. I'm not a giant fan of any type of sour bread, but all the food was awesome, man. And the coffee was a little, whew, little tiny cup, man, to make your brain pop. And so one of the things I've always asked a question, when this was happening to us over here, what did you hear about over here in your country? What did you hear about over here in your township or your city where you were? And from a lot of what I could gather, and this is talking all the conversations I had put together, we didn't really hear much about black people in America. Until around maybe the 60s, they were getting stories and hearing, they were hearing just a little bit of what was happening. But other than that, they really didn't hear much about black people in America. So they didn't really know what was going on until those late years. One person was extremely heartbroken because they felt exactly what I just said about this fractured family, and we were separated. So when I tell you that I didn't want to watch Small Axe, but then I watched Small Axe because I was attracted to the fact that this is going to be a different story being told about a different group of Africans in the diaspora, check it out. Because it's stories that you won't really hear. There are some similarities. There is, you know, the police being crooked and stupid. There is other things. There is an issue with the educational system that we even had here and still have here. But it was really, really good to see. It was good to see different storytelling and different stories altogether that you probably will never see on regular television. Most of what you hear about black television in America or the history of Africans in America are, you know, these type of gang stories and everything. We all know what's going on in the news, and we all know that the news loops stuff around so they give you the same information over and over and over and over and over for weeks and months, and like last year for a whole entire year, and all it ever does is get people angry and start some other stuff. It's not about healing. It's about starting some daggone trouble, and then the end result is what? What is the end result? What was the end result of the end of the year? Cities being burnt, people being arrested, people being killed, and again, a black community or a, you know, Africans, the African community is fractured again on this land, again and again and again and again and again. And how much of that can you possibly ingest before your head explodes and you're so depressed that you can't do anything? So it was good to see this and to see other different type of storytelling that we don't usually see and hear. So you should check it out. I think we all should check it out and watch it and share it. And I'm not talking because some Black History Month type of experience, but I'm just saying, just to see a different storytelling. And you may come away with it, like I said, you know, in this diaspora that we're in, treated poorly. Many have found ways to adjust and to rise up against. And, you know, the Caribbean community, although they went through a lot between that 60, well, he does a period between 60, 69 and 80 something, have grown to do a lot. You know, it's amazing that Africans that in many different countries speak minimum three languages. Most speak 4 to 5 languages. And they travel. And yet other Africans in the diaspora don't travel as much. America in itself doesn't really travel abroad, okay? And so that's another issue. Americans don't usually travel abroad, and when they go to, you know, certain places. And like when they do go on vacation, they go down to Cancun, Mexico, or they may go to one or two places in the Caribbean, but we'll usually go to Europe, and you'll see a lot of other people who will go to Europe, and it's amazing. So culturally speaking, Americans don't travel abroad as much. And when it comes to Africans in America, they don't travel overseas and abroad either. You know, Elizabeth and I have been talking, I said this long before we saw this, and I've been thinking about it. I said, I really want to go backpacking in Africa. And I hear South Africa is really, really nice. And I've seen a few people who have backpacked in South Africa and a few other places. I don't know if they go to Central, but I know a few people have been to South Africa. I said, it's a beautiful area to go to. Now, there are many different countries down there. But I said, I would like to do that. And I would like to do that maybe next year, you know, after we go through a lot of traveling through this our own United States. I said, maybe next year, God willing, we can go and we can backpack or travel over to South Africa. It would be nice. So I said I was going to bring her on. She is not here. Maybe we'll pick this up at another time, because I didn't plan on doing this whole part and not have her on as the other half. But this is definitely, like I said, a larger discussion as to how do we work this out? How does this happen? How did this happen? And why would people treat others, or at least Africans, in this particular manner? In this particular manner. And what could we do to make things better within that diaspora? Like I said, connect with other people, just like other people connect with other people. I'm not mad that, Bobby McAllister can chase back his bloodline, you know, fourth and fifth generation that take him all the way back to Ireland. I'm not mad at you. I'm upset that I don't have that opportunity to trace all that back, or do I? The work would be so much harder. And how far back and how where can we go? I know my dad had traced our history, family history. I forgot which side of his family, but back down to Barbados. I know my mother's side, there was some supposed story of some slaves that made it all the way up to New Jersey. And that's about all I have. So if you haven't checked this out, go ahead and check it out. And it was a great thing, man. I would give this 10 out of 10, 5 out of 5 stars as a really, really good series to check out on Amazon. And I'm going to check up out of here. Listen, you don't have to agree with me on this. We, like I used to say all the time, we don't have to agree, but you know what? We could look at one another and see that we are all created in God's image. He created the man and woman. We're image bearers. So we've got to do a lot better at loving one another and treating each other as if we are seriously, image bearers of God, and that we are actually related on this planet. I think by this point now, we've all have heard that, you know, the oldest life was discovered was on the continent of Africa. So we know that life began from there. So yeah, let's try to do better at loving one another. See you later.